Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and it is the 13th of September 2011 here in Japan. And today I'm talking on the line to Pepe Escobar, the reporter for the Asia Times Online, as well as Al Jazeera and Huffington Post and Alternate and many other outlets beside. It's very much an honor to have you on the program again today, Pepe. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, James. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, well, it is a pleasure to have you here because today I'd like to talk a little bit about the recent moves of Palestine, the Palestinian Authority, to go for a full UN membership. And Mahmoud Abbas will be traveling to New York this month to try to raise support for this Palestinian UN membership bid. Tell us what you think about this idea and where do you think it's headed?
Wow, look, in fact, I've been losing sleep lately thinking, what is the Bibi Netanyahu government is thinking actually lately? Because they have managed to antagonize the only two powers that were more or less supportive of Israel in the region, Turkey and Egypt. We know what happened in Egypt a few days ago when the so-called mob invaded the Israeli embassy in Cairo. That was not a mob. This was part of protesters that have been in Tahrir Square since February. And if you talk to the average Egyptian in Cairo or anywhere else in Egypt, and you start talking about the Camp David Accords, I would bet with anybody that at least 95% of them will say, okay, look, let's abrogate the Camp David Accords now or yesterday. Obviously, considering that we are in a situation that we have a undisguised military dictatorship in Cairo at the moment, and Tantawi, by the way, was very, very close with all past governments in Israel, Olmert, Livni, Barak, Bibi, you name it. Nothing's going to happen nowadays. But if we have free and fair elections in Egypt, if we have a really sovereign government in Egypt elected by the people, the first thing in terms of foreign policy they're going to do is let's review the Camp David Accords. So what happened in Egypt a few days ago in Cairo is a taste of things to come. And then there's the other aspect, which is the Turkey angle. As we speak at the moment, Turkey practically cut off diplomatic relations with Israel. This is because of the Mavi Marmara incident, of course, and the fact that the Israeli government still refuses to make a formal apology for the Mavi Marmara because they alleged it was in self-defense. Obviously, Turkey, they have a policy they call zero problems with their neighbors, elaborated by their foreign minister, Professor Davutoglu. Great scholar, it's a great policy. It had been working until recently. But there are now two huge cracks, Israel and what to do about Syria. So in terms of Syria, the Turks are more or less backtracking and say, look, let's try to give the benefit of the doubt. Let's say a few more weeks at least to Bashar al-Assad. So we try to keep what we built in these past 2 years or so, which is the Tehran-Ankara-Damascus alliance in terms of foreign policy, in terms of integrating the region. The problem is now that Turkey has to face this Israeli intransigence. And now they came to the conclusion that there's no way there can be any negotiation with a government headed by Bibi, controlled by settlers, basically, and with Lieberman, former Moldova bouncer, as foreign minister. So this is the, you know, more or less the landscape as Israel gets to this meeting at the UN. What's going to happen over there? Of course, nobody has a crystal ball. We have an idea what is going to happen in terms of the UN General Assembly. We're going to have 140, 150 countries, at least, from all over the world, different continents, maybe not including the European Union as a bloc, voting in favor of the Palestinian Authority being admitted at UN as a state and not as an observer anymore. So what's going to happen after next? So this means the world gives a moral vote of approval for the idea of the of a Palestine state, even though it's not the reality of a Palestine state, because what does the government of Bibi want, basically? A collection of Bantustans, which is not a sovereign state, with no defined borders, because Israel itself has no defined borders, with no independent foreign policy, incapable of patrolling their own airspace and the seas in front of Gaza, for instance. So this is unacceptable in terms of international law. But from the point of view of the Palestinians, this is a first step. Because then, if they are admitted as a state by the UN, they can, for instance, start suing the Israeli state for all sorts of misdeeds. They will be supported by most of the real international community, not the U.S. NATO countries compound that they call international units. They'll be supported by most of Asia, the whole of Latin America, which already recognized Palestine. Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, Ecuador, a few months ago, they all recognized Palestine. So what would be the next step? Would be for the U.S. and the EU to recognize Palestine. We know the U.S. won't do it for obvious reasons that everybody knows. The way Washington works and the way the Israeli lobby works over Washington. The EU is very complicated. Like until 2 days ago, Sarkozy in Paris was saying, look, the EU has to vote as a bloc. But nobody knows if they're going to vote for or against it. Even assuming they will vote for at the floor, if this thing goes to the Security Council, it's almost certain that the U.S., Britain, and France would vote against it, even though you don't need the Security Council vote to legitimize a session of a state. This is done by the General Assembly. So it will be clear who's against the idea of a Palestine state if this thing goes to the Security Council. So this is the only card left for the Palestinians at the moment. Look, let's have a global public opinion on our side. And then we don't know what's going to happen next because it will depend on the Israeli response. And the Israeli response, considering the facts on the ground, which is let's build more settlements and let's not negotiate. And considering the formation of this PB government could be a really hardcore response, right?
Absolutely. Well, you bring up so many good points there, but one point that I don't really know, you bring up the point that this accession, the membership bid would be taking place in the General Assembly, not the Security Council. What is the procedure for this? Is it simply a majority vote?
Yes, it is a majority vote. So if you have 140, 150, and most of them already committed, you know, that's it. It's a simple majority. That's what is required. So now we have 193 states in the UN, I think. And now with Southern Sudan, 194. If you have 150, it's in the bag. It doesn't need to go to the Security Council, you know, for the formal recognition. This is a matter for the General Assembly floor, actually. And that's why the Palestinians are confident. What nobody knows is what will be the U.S. response, apart from pressuring Abbas for the past few weeks, almost on a daily basis, then, and especially the Israeli response, because they have not only they have their backs against the wall in terms of world public opinion, even regionally, they sidelined Turkey and Egypt. This was, in terms of foreign international relations and foreign diplomacy, was a terrible mistake.
Well, as you point out, they're in an extremely, extremely delicate state now, probably more delicate than they've been for several years, just given what's just taken place across the region. So obviously Israel is on some insecure footing in a lot of different ways. What can they do to really counteract this? Obviously, they don't want this this vote to go ahead, but is there anything they can actually do to try to head this off at the pass other than try to promise more negotiations or something like that?
Exactly, because this was the only tactic they always had. If you analyze what Barak, Olmert, Livni, Bibi have been saying for the past 10 years or so, it's always the same thing. We are for peace. We want to negotiate. We have no preconditions and all that. But when you delineate some sort of roadmap to start negotiations, they always backtrack. And they start building more settlements. So what was the response these past 2 or 3 months? Building more settlements, in fact, because they knew that this the General Assembly would be inevitable. They know for at least 6 months that the Palestinians will go with that because this is the Palestinian plan A and there's no plan B. There's nothing else left for them in terms of, okay, let's get a measure of support from the world at least. We're not going to get our state. We're not going to get a sovereign state. But this is our first step. They tried everything. They even start thinking, look, if the Israelis' response is really hardcore, we're going to have an intifada number three. And if we have an intifada number three, most of world public opinion will be on our side after what happens at the UN. So this is the only thing left. Like, they are in such a fragile situation. But Israel, as a sovereign state and as the most powerful army in the Middle East, the only country with nuclear weapons in the Middle East, they are as fragile as the Palestinians in terms of international public opinion at the moment. And this is astonishing when you think of it.
It really is astonishing. It really is. And it makes you wonder what's coming next. I mean, I really can't see where this is going to play out to, but I'm sure it'll be...
Nobody knows, James. In fact, I've been reading the Israeli press this past two or three days. They don't know. They are... Even the best, I would say, progressive center-left or left commentators are writing for Haaretz, for instance. They are puzzled. And they know that this government put them against the wall. And there's no way out for the government or for Israel, for that matter. And the fact that Israel has lost, even in Europe, they lost public support, including in countries where Israel was always viewed with extremely cozy, like France, for instance. Even Sarkozy is starting to considering voting for Palestine at the General Assembly, at the floor. So this would be unthinkable a few months ago. And we all know that Sarkozy is in France, he is considered the Jewish lobby nec plus ultra, you know. So you see how things change. And the thing is, I was struck by the indignados, the outraged movement in Israel, which was a social justice movement, right? These demonstrations in all over Israel, especially in Tel Aviv. But this did not translate into a political movement. I said, let's bring down this government because they are putting our backs against the wall. So I didn't understand the lack of transition. You know, you can protest against the government saying that our standard of living is horrible because of these government's policies. And at the same time, you don't criticize their political decisions. It doesn't make sense.
No, it really doesn't. It really doesn't. Well, it's an interesting time all around. And again, I really don't know how this is going to play out, but it's going to be very interesting to see. So are there any other points you'd like to make about this discussion?
Well, I say, I hate crystal balls, James. So let's wait and see. But as both sides are so fragile, and the world itself, the US and the EU are so fragile as well at this moment, nobody knows what could happen. You know, I'm sure it's not going to go towards a roadmap, let's sit at the table and discuss it, because with this government in Israel, this is absolutely impossible. Perhaps with the Kadima-controlled government, perhaps, but I'm not so sure. The last time I saw Tzipi Livni, she was basically a BB light. I'm not sure she changed that much later, you know.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll leave it there. I'm sure we'll be seeing in the next few weeks what's going to play out. So I'm looking forward to reading your commentary on various online sites. Pepe Escobar, thank you as always for your time.
Thanks, James. Thank you.